Tem, once we get there we go. All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Suds in the Squared Circle, Suds News. I am Vinny, and if you notice, Christy's not here today. I have a special guest co-host, Matt from the 10th floor. Matt, thank you for filling in.
Hey, no problem, no problem. You know, we're a happy community here in the General Hospital podcasting
Hey,
community.
hang
You
on.
still talking about GH? You talking about days too now?
I've got to restart the Zoom because for some reason it came up private. I hate
Oh,
that.
lame.
Or restart the live stream. I don't know why it does that. Every so often
Oh, that's weird.
it comes up as private, even though it's. And there's a chat. Okay. All right. Take two. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Suds in the Squared Circle, Suds News. My name is Vinny. And as you can tell, Christy is not here with me today, but I do have a special guest co-host, Matt from the 10th floor and Days for Dummies. Matt, thank you for filling in.
No problem, no problem. You reach out, I'm here for you, man.
That is good. I appreciate that.
You know,
Thank you
we're a
for.
happy podcasting community here, right?
That is very true again. And again, I'd like to officially congratulate you and your mom for getting the gig for the Daytime Emmys coming up on this Friday night on both CBS and Paramount Plus.
I mean, you know, I mean, we're not going to be broadcast necessarily on those channels unless you see us in the corner. But yeah, you know, we got invited to do press at the red carpet, and so, you know, we're going to go there. We're going to put our suit jackets on, smile bright, and hope for the best.
Absolutely. And it's always a good thing. I'll be watching live and looking forward to your reports that come out later on. So let's before we get into any actual GH news, because my brain is so filled with soaps because I've been watching all four soaps, and I'm all caught up with all four of them now. I do want to announce that after the new year, hey, what's up, James? JLJ Media in the chat room. Thank you for joining us. After the new year, I'm going to be starting a new podcast with a friend of mine, and it's going to be called B&B for Beginners for Bold and the Beautiful. James says he's wearing pajamas at the Emmys.
Perfect. Perfect.
Absolutely perfect. B&B for Beginners, that'll be beginning after the new year, in 2024. My brain is so filled with all of the soaps. It's overwhelming. I don't know how everybody does it, but either way, Matt, fill us in on how Days for Dummies has been going, because I know that's a fairly new venture for you.
It's fairly new. You know, with anything, it takes a little bit of time for some momentum to carry. Plus, we're on like West Coast, we're on super early. East Coast, we're on at lunch. So, you know, trying to get that all figured out. But so far, so good. You know, it's me and mom from 10th floor, and then we have Angela. We call her Professor Angela because she's the Days of Our Lives expert. And so, you know, we go and we pretty much. We just talk about the week. Mom and I don't know anything. We don't know any of these characters. We don't know the history. We don't barely know the relationship. So Angela is very helpful in explaining how everything matters. But it's been a lot of fun. It's been super fun, actually. Days of Our Lives is it's an enjoyable show.
Yeah, it really is. I've been watching that now for almost a year, actually. I started watching when Steve Burton came on to the. I started with, Beyond Salem. I watched both seasons of that, and then when Steve Burton came on to the Mothership, I did switch over and get into Days, and just recently got into Y&R and B&B, and caught up. And let me tell you something. B&B is fantastic. If you want to see something where it's actually getting into the weeds, B&B is a good show too. And then Wynar, the storyline that's going on, like they're actually taking one storyline, branching it off, and absolutely going with different directions with it, with legacy characters going back to the past. And it's just fantastic.
So now's the time. Now's the time. If you want to get into a new soap, if you want to dive into Bold and the Beautiful, you're going to have somebody alongside with you for the journey.
Exactly. Yep. And no, James, it's not competition. We're all family here. So it's just, think about it as more of a supplemental to the B&B mini spotlight. And
supplemental. I like it.
Yes, exactly. But anyways, so seeing as I do have you on, I can't pass up the opportunity to ask you your reaction to CM Punk coming back to the WWE.
Oh, okay. Sure. Sure, sure. Do you have any more lead in, or do you just want me to jump right in?
Jump right in. I mean, as you do know your stuff about wrestling, and we've done the watch along before.
We did. We watched Bray Wyatt and John Cena.
Not though. A wrestling fan, so whenever I talk about wrestling, she
glosses over.
So exactly. So while I have you here, I have your reaction.
It's where he should be. You know, if you're in a situation in which you feel like you need to punch your coworkers, you probably shouldn't be working there anymore.
Right.
You know, whoever was right, if you blame CM Punk, if you blame Jack Perry, doesn't matter. If you are in a situation like that, you got to move on to a better place for you. So you don't want to do that. So I think that he absolutely went home. I think that he's absolutely telling the truth when he's standing there in the promos.
Yeah.
Saying, oh, you know, I'm home. I'm so happy to be here. Here's my big smile. How could you not be?
Yeah.
How could you not be thrilled to be back in the WWE? And that's not even a knock against AEW. But how can you not be thrilled to be back on top WWE, millions of fans worldwide chanting your name, hoping for this for, what was it, 10 years
he was gone? Just about.
Nobody ever forgot him there. You know, and I think that he... in his welcome back promo, he had said, a wise man told me that in order to really achieve what I wanted here, I needed to leave and come back.
Exactly.
And that was a reference to Paul Heyman.
Yep.
And Paul Heyman is never wrong.
That's true.
I think that, I think that he blew up at the end of it. You know, he totally imploded in on himself, was a victim of his own wants, you know, and who hasn't experienced that professionally? Who hasn't felt like you've just been pressed up against the ceiling and you know that you can do more and they're just not giving it to you?
Yeah.
And how that can fester inside of you and be really frustrating inside of you. And if you are in a limited career business or limited opportunity business like pro wrestling, you got WWE, especially at the time. If you weren't getting what you wanted from them then,
right?
Where else was there to go? That must have been incredibly stressful. And very disappointing on a regular basis.
No,
right, wrong, moral, amoral, doesn't matter. It's just the truth of the situation.
Yeah.
So, I think that it's all going to work out.
Oh, yeah.
Everybody's going to make a ton of money, which is what we want in wrestling.
Yeah, exactly. And the thing is that I think that now is the right time for him to come back. Because, you know, it created buzz when he went to AEW because everybody's like, oh yeah, he's coming back. After 8 years away from wrestling, he's coming back. And you know, it's like, say what you will about AEW, say what you will about Tony Khan. It is competition for the WWE, and competition is one of the best things for the wrestling industry. We saw it during the Monday Night Wars. TNA tried, they didn't get there because they didn't have the money behind them. And AEW, Tony Khan is a billionaire. The Khan family is a billionaire. Unfortunately, in the structure of AEW, they're still feeling things out, even 5 years in.
Yeah. There's a level of maturity for a company. You know, I think what if we were to compare? See, look at me trying to just on the fly put together sentences at 7 o'clock for me. I think that if you were to compare WWE over the last couple of years and then compare and then look at AEW, you're never going to be able to see the same company. Right. WWE has been around for so long. They've gone through it. They have evolved, become a publicly traded billion-dollar company worldwide. Mm-hmm. They grew up. But if you were to take a look at them in the 80s and 90s, they were behaving pretty much just the same way as AEW is right now.
Yep.
So it's really just a matter of maturity of the brand, of the company. I think that's really what it boils down to. And if there comes to a point in which investors that aren't the Khan family become interested, then it's entirely possible that they might clean some stuff up.
Oh, yeah.
But you can tell that the decisions are being made on a fan level, I want to say, you know, like somebody, you know, Tony Khan, excited to have one of his favorite wrestlers on the roster without maybe thinking it through, without thinking about the greater impact that it might have backstage, without thinking about the other egos that you have backstage. Because if you take a look at that situation that eliminated CM Punk from AEW, in my eyes, in my estimation, Jack Perry did everything wrong.
I agree. Yeah.
But that's me. That's just my opinion. I know that there's a lot of different opinions out there.
There is. Yeah.
But if I was back there and if I was working back there and I saw the whole situation, if I saw, hey, you know, maybe not use real car glass in the pre-match for this pay-per-view. Yeah.
Exactly.
Save that for later. Let's build the show. Let us do wrestling the way that wrestling is meant to be done. You know, it's not about Jack Perry getting his pop in the first match. It's about the fans having a great time all night long.
Exactly.
But that's my mentality on it. Yeah. What's going on in AEW has been something that I have seen on the independent level growing for years.
Yeah.
Which is the, well, how am I supposed to get my stuff in?
Mm-hmm.
And that's a question that I heard. Even doing battle royals, like, hey, you know, you think you guys might be able to clear the ring for a minute so I can get some of my stuff in? It's not exactly appropriate for every single match to make you the center focus and spotlight.
National television or pay-per-view.
Or national television paper, you know, whatever it might be.
Right.
Now, I've never worked on the level of AEW or WWE, so I really don't know firsthand experience what sort of influences or stress or wants or needs or whatever may be fueling people up at the top level. I feel like I can climb into the mindset a little bit. And there's always some respect for the veterans that need to take place.
Right.
I think that's also true in the soap world.
Exactly. All right. Well, let's kind of move on to what everybody's here for.
Here for.
That is all the Port Charles shenanigans. First off, there's been a lot of controversy over the past 2 days regarding General Hospital and certain actors or characters that are on the show. There was a public, I guess it was a Zoom event that both Josh Swickard and Amanda Satin, who play Chase in Brooklyn, they both came out and said that they don't feel comfortable doing love scenes.
Right.
And, you know, so they're not going to be doing the whole, you know, hardcore love sex that, you know, other, like a Jocelyn and Dex would do. You know,
and they're not even really interested in making out on the bed and fading to black either.
Exactly. So, you know, unfortunately, the problem is that there are so many people in the soap fandom now that are calling for their heads. They're calling for, hey, Nathan, thanks for joining us today. Again, if you're watching and you like what you see, give us a thumbs up, share a thumbs up, subscribe. Get notified for Suds in a Squared Circle. However, I will say, you know, like I said, they're calling for Chase for Josh Swickard and Amanda Seton to be recast, to be fired, to be whatever you want to call it.
Right. And
you know what? In my opinion, it's like I'm there for the story. I could care, you know, if I wanted to watch, you know, a lot of skin, I'd be watching porn. Quite honestly. But the fact of the matter is, you know, it's really their choice. Like, as long as the director, the producer, the powers that be of the show agree to those, I don't want to say demands, but agree to those situations in contracts,
limitations, boundaries.
Right. Exactly. I have to apologize. I thought it was Amanda putting the boundaries on because of her religion. But apparently it was just because they're both, you know, married. They both have children.
They're both married with young kids.
Exactly.
They just don't want to, is what it comes down to. They don't want to do that on daytime TV. They don't want to have that You know, they don't want to field the questions. They don't want to deal with the emotions, even if they have the most copacetic marriages of all time.
Right.
They know their partners better than we do, even if the partners aren't saying anything. Who knows how uncomfortable they may? I don't know. I don't know. I don't know. I don't know. All I know is that this is something that they want.
Exactly.
And that's something that the show said, okay, no problem.
Well, it's the same thing with, you know, Rena Sofer, who came back. She pointed out, she said that she didn't want to have any kind of romantic relationship rekindling with Ned because they used to be married in real life, her and Molly Kerr, and that it would be disrespectful to their current marriages. So, you know, actors are human. Actors are people. Yeah. They have their boundaries. So, why are we the ones that have to say, oh, well, they got to be recast because I want this?
Now, if I were to play the devil's advocate, which I should, since it's a podcast and we should talk about it, I get it. I get that it's Love in the Afternoon. I get that this is traditional things that you're going to see on a soap opera and have for decades and decades and decades. I totally understand that. And you're not getting that on General Hospital.
No, you're not.
It might not be as steamy as Days was the other day. It might not be... it might not be what it was in the 90s. You know, might not have Sonny being like, leave the shoes on, you know, like
right.
We're not getting there. We don't have a Jew Lexus choking each other out. We're not there anymore, whether that's COVID, whether that's just because ABC is like, hey, we're Disney, whether that's just why bother doing all of that. It's so much. I mean, I don't know. I don't work back there. It's not like it doesn't exist on the soap. So it's not like Amanda Seton and Joss Wickard's boundaries have limited what the show can do.
Right.
It just limits what we get to see from this couple. And if it didn't work for General Hospital, if it didn't work for Frank Valentini, then they would have done something about it.
Right.
They would have not put them in relationships. They would have made them boring until the end of their contract so they can replace them with people who are more willing to do that. But all it really just comes down to how necessary General Hospital finds it for those specific characters.
Right.
And they don't find it necessary for those specific characters. And that's just the fact of the matter.
Mm-hmm.
James is in the chat saying, you know, GH is boring in that department. The other soaps are fine.
Right.
And that's valid, but it's what they're doing. As fans, we can totally say, hey, we would like to see more. But I think that we, as just human beings, start to toe and cross the line when we say you must.
Right, exactly.
And that's really, you know, when it came to the controversy on Twitter and the conversations that I was involved in, that's really what it boils down to. Yeah. We shouldn't say you must.
Well, you know, and you also pointed out in one of your excerpts on X, I don't call them tweets anymore, I call them excerpts, I've been, you know.
Whatever.
You also pointed out that Donnell Turner has stated publicly that he doesn't want to kiss every female on the set. So
yeah, that's something he said at one of the conventions.
Right. So, you know, he's obviously in a committed relationship with Portia, but he's also kissed Jordan. You know, and those are women that he, based on story, makes sense for him to kiss. You know, he's not out there you know, trying to hook up with every other female in Port Charles. Mm-hmm. And James did point out, he said, I wish we didn't know this. Sometimes it's nice not to know everything behind the scenes. And there are all kinds of deals that happen on these soaps behind the scenes, which we know. And you know, you're right, because that's one of the biggest things that I have with wrestling when it comes to, you know, knowing stuff on social media.
Mm-hmm.
For example, and I'm going to use this, Baron Corbin, who is a big time heel in WWE and NXT, whatever you want to talk about, whatever you want to say. Jeannie, welcome to Suds in the Square Circle. And Baron Corbin is a heel who you're supposed to hate. Yet on his social media, he's constantly sharing how good he is at grilling. And as a man, as a fat guy, I like seeing what he's making on the grill. So, you know, and he actually posted a picture with Taylor Swift on his social media. In 2023, you have Baron Corbin and Taylor Swift in the same picture from the Chiefs game yesterday. But it makes, when you see the people behind the scenes, and I'll use Alexa Bliss as well, you know, a heel character, she adopted a deaf pig, you know, and named Larry Steve. And she was, you know, she was putting him all over social media. How do you hate somebody like that? You know what I mean?
It's hard. It's hard. And that's what, you know, when it comes to wrestling, you know, we had kayfabe for a long
Right,
time,
yeah.
and now we have to look at this as real versus real, like we do with soaps, right? R-E-A-L versus R-E-E-O. Now you have to do that with wrestling. You didn't have to do that before. It is a little easier to accept what you're seeing when you don't know what's going on. When it comes down to it, if nothing was said on Zoom, then people would be like, how come they don't bone? And then that would be the end of it. Like,
Right.
there wouldn't have been this huge explosion of controversy, and she needs to get out of there. I demand from my TV that she takes her shirt off. Like, it's whoa, whoa, you know?
So, Christy and I had also said this, talked about it, and it's like, you know, going through, and I'll be honest, Amanda Seton is one of the more attractive women on General Hospital, and I've questioned it myself. Why is she always wearing a suit jacket or a blazer, or, you know, she's not showing cleavage and all that. But, you know, the fact of the matter is, you know, after I found out it was her choice, that's it. It's her choice.
That really is it. And if it didn't work for the show, they wouldn't do it.
Right.
It doesn't work for some of the fans, but it's also important to understand that the people who are the most vocal and loud on Twitter and on Facebook and stuff is a small section of everybody that's watching General Hospital. There is, it's next to impossible for people who are communicating online about the show to know what the true general audience wants, because the true general audience is not participating
Right.
in the conversation.
It's a
I can
very
say from the
vocal
followers
minority.
that I have on Twitter, I can say from the likes and the shares and the replies that I get, there is far more agreement with the things that I think and say than negativity or disagreement.
Right.
But the disagreement is far louder
Yes.
than the agreement.
Yep. Well, it goes back to something I learned in retail, and that is, you know, in customer service. When you have somebody who's a happy customer, they'll tell their 10 closest friends, whatever. But if you piss a customer off, they're going to go blast you on social media. They're going to tell 10,000 people, and all of a sudden, you know, you're being canceled. But that's what it boils down to, is that when you're happy and when you're enjoying something, you're not as vocal, you know.
Yeah,
But when you're
absolutely.
mad, you're believe me, I caught the wrath of the Sabrina Nation earlier in the summer, so I know how.
It's really easy to catch it online too, you know. You can say positive things about Jex and get Sabrina fans saying how dare you. You can say positive things about Sabrina and have Jex fans saying how dare you. You can say positive things about Scotty and Liesl and have people who like Scotty and Lucy say what the heck is wrong with you. Like, there's really no way to win. So, you know, you just have to cross your fingers and try your best.
Yeah, and James just pointed out some people hate watching shows, and it's true. I think there's people that hate watch GH just to be negative about it.
Oh, definitely.
I've had to mute other accounts on Twitter, on X, just because I'm tired of the negativity.
So I used to, I in wrestling, I worked with this guy named Venice DeMarco, very good friend of mine, super dork. Love him. Venice, if you see this, hi. And I learned from him that some people just navigate what they like through what they don't like about it. Big superhero and Marvel fan, big Star Wars fan, hates everything that they do. But the biggest fan in the world of this thing.
Mm-hmm.
So it's sometimes it's a little bewildering, but through knowing him and being friends with him, it really gave me that perspective, because I don't have that. I navigate what I like through what I like, and I ignore what I don't. So it is a thing. It's a thing that people do. Clearly there's a market for it, and then that market is social media.
Yeah. Let's kind of, you know, but I mean, we did see kind of building off of it. We did see Chase propose to Brooklyn.
Yes.
They did get engaged. I like them as a couple. I could see them, you know, without the sex, I could see them getting married and then having a good life together. And I really like how, you know, Brooklyn originally felt that he only proposed because her mother and grandmother put him up to it. Believe me, my first engagement, I felt the same way. I had a, you know, I ended up proposing to my first fiance, at her job, because her mother was kind of like right there and I didn't get to do what I wanted to do. So I can understand the concept. But the fact of the matter is, you know, it boils down to he showed her the ring and said, I've had this for a while. I just didn't know the right time to ask you. And, you know, they kind of expedited it. So it turned out to be a very romantic type of thing.
I'm buying him with it. So that's the stories that you're going to be getting from Chase and Brooklyn is those moments of their relationship. If I've been holding on to this ring, I didn't know how to give it to you. We're going to get a beautiful wedding. They're probably going to be happy. And likely one of them is going to move away or something. Like, I don't know. Like, I don't know. I don't know what they're willing to play. I don't know. I don't know. You know, when it comes to the limitations, when it comes to the love, I don't know how limited they're. Well, I'm not interested in cheating. You know, I don't know how deep this goes, but we also don't know who is unwilling to work on Thursdays.
Right.
You know,
exactly. That reminds me of something from the original, from the first ECW One Night Stand, where Paul Heyman, who's railing against the WWE guys, goes to JBL. The only reason why you were champion for a year is because Triple H didn't want to work Tuesdays.
Right.
But yeah, so
they're cute. I like them. I've always liked them. You know,
I have too.
I think that, you know, some of the criticism is absolutely valid. It's been a little slow. It's been a little dull sometimes. I think that they suffered from a little bit of lack of direction from the original writers. The attempts came through and we're like, well, we'll do something here. We'll give them a little bit of a little pizzazz between the two of them in conversation. Yeah. I really liked the lines that they had with each other during strike time.
Yeah.
And so, you know, that's just where they're at with it. Is it what is going to be pulling in millions of viewers? No. Is it filling the time and giving us something enjoyable to watch? Yes. And that's what's great about soaps too, is they offer so much during the day that you just, you like what you like, and you wait for you wait to like the next thing.
Right. No, you're exactly right. Let's move on to another thing that caused quite a bit of controversy. Joe Feel Love. Violet Finn on you know, I think it was on Thursday or Friday, where she sang an original song with Chase playing the guitar, and you know, she sang it, or while the family was putting up the Christmas decorations, and she got so much hate. I'm sorry, but there were so many people who slammed her and said that
I feel like it has more to do with Finn than with Violet.
I agree, yes. But you know, it's like they were calling her obnoxious, her, and there's
James in here, yeah, the Violet,
yeah. But you know, it's like, give the girl a break. She's 8 years old or whatever she is, you know, and it's age appropriate for a girl who's, let's say, in second grade to come home, you know, while the full family's there and say, hey, I wrote a song. Go ahead and, you know, go. I want to sing it. Uncle Chase is going to play the guitar.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's age appropriate. I had no problem. I thought she did great.
I think that there probably more people had no problem with it than problem with it. And you know, again, it's that narrow window of social media that we're able to see through. I thought it was totally fine. You know, when it comes down to it, yeah, there's a lot of people out there that don't like Violet. Once you say Joe Fiel, you're evil and wrong. Stop that. Right. It's okay to be annoyed by Violet. It's okay to think that the precocious thing at 8 years old isn't cute anymore. Mm-hmm. But we also have to understand that Joe Fiel Love herself is incredibly precocious.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's her entire personality. so, you know, it's taste. And when it comes down to it, it was a cutesy little song during Christmas time. Like, me personally, whatever, it was 3 minutes. Yeah. Like, it's okay, but I personally feel like a lot of the attention is more from the people who are not enjoying Finn.
And it's
bleeding on to this right. Other character.
Yeah.
James says no, it's Violet, but hey, you know, like, but that's it's important. It's everybody has their own opinion, everybody has their own feeling on it,
right?
But you can't go a second without seeing somebody just hating Finn. Mm-hmm. So, you know, but I think that there might be a little splash over
again for, you know, and I'll challenge James to say it, you know, in that, you know, when people complain that there aren't enough kids on Canvas, and then, you know, you have an abundance of kids, whether it's Violet or whether it's James or whether it's, you know, Georgie or Wiley or whoever, you know, yeah, it's like, when we have an abundance of kids, then you're complaining of, you know, people, not James specifically, but you know, there are a lot of people who are complaining about what the kids are doing and that they're getting in the way. So again, it does come down to taste. It comes down to the vocal minority. And again, you're right. It's never okay to attack an actor because
it's never okay to attack. And yeah, anytime, you know, Laura Wrights and the Maurice Bernards and the, you know, all of those popular ones that people like to hate on personally, you know, yeah. Jeannie thinks Violet's cute. You know, you can just see the split already in your chat exactly. There between the different opinions. And when it comes down to it, who are you going to make happy when you make a change? You know, they can get rid of the entire Finn Chase family. And that's going to make some people incredibly happy, and it's going to really disappoint other people. What right. is the right choice? There is no right choice. You can only try your best.
Right. And again, it could come down to story. I mean, the whole Gregory situation with him, you know, battling the ALS, and it's getting worse, and, you know, he wants to get the bucket list done. He wants to, you know, be able to, you know, spend this Christmas because it could be his last. And that's a real world problem. And I think one of the things is that when you're watching television, whether it's a soap opera, whether it's wrestling, whether it's, you know, sci-fi, whatever, you're watching it as an escape. You don't want to necessarily have real life situations thrown in your face. But then there are people who think the other way and want the soap operas because they're so close to almost real life that they do handle real life situations, whether it's, you know, surrogacy and somebody losing the baby, or you know, ALS, or, you know, on Bold and the Beautiful, Eric, and there could be a miracle cure out there. You know what I mean? So that there's a possibility that, you know, people are upset with the actual stories, and mm-hmm. you know, it's going on to the characters.
Yeah, I mean, whatever, you know, people are going to be hateful, whatever, you know, come to the 10th floor, come to Suds in the Squirt Surf. We're going to have a good time talking about the things that we enjoy, you know, yep. I don't know. It's just a thing. You know, James wishes that Gregory didn't have ALS. Yeah, you know, I mean, there's just all kinds of different holes that you can poke through things depending on what you want to see. Yeah. I don't know. It's tough. But, I like it just fine. Has it been better in the past? Sure.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. No denying it's been better in the past. Has it been more accurate to canon in the past? Yeah, sure. Has it utilized history better in the past? Absolutely, yes. Mm-hmm. Is it still enjoyable for me personally to watch? It is.
Yeah. And I'm the same way. I you know, it's like there are things that I don't feel comfortable. I don't want to say that I don't feel comfortable with, but there are things that I don't like. There are things, you know, and I agree with Jamie, you know. Tired of giving the old folks illness storylines, because it's true, it's almost ageism, you know, to mm-hmm. the point where that's the only thing they can do. Well, no, I mean, we see Robert and Diane now in a, you know, situation where they're very flirtatious with each other. I'm enjoying that, and mm-hmm. I know there's people out there who love Robert and Holly, or love Robert and Anna, or whatever the case may be. I'm enjoying Robert and Diane. I like their, you know, they're snarking this flirtation, you know, between each other. And Diana's pulled no punches. She's one of my favorite characters on the show.
Yeah, my mom's too. when it comes down to it, just because it's okay to like something that happened before, and it's also okay to like something that's happening now, even if it's not the same thing, you know?
Yeah, you're exactly right. And, you know, we're going to be into a pretty heavy situation coming up, because they're going to address, you know, Bobby's passing. You know, so the tear jerkers are going to be coming, you know, starting with last Friday with Tracy on the plane looking at the picture of her and Luke.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and there, of course, the whole fact of Luke being dead is a hot button issue. How do you kill off a legacy character, you know, off camera? But again, if Anthony Geary doesn't want to come back, it's...
Where has he been? Why does it matter?
Right, exactly. You know? He's happy, he's living it up over in Amsterdam, which, you know, is a much better life than here in the States, I can guarantee you that. But he, you know, he's enjoying his life, he's retired, you know, so if he doesn't want to come back to actually do a Luke death, you know,
mm-hmm.
that's his choice again. You know, and unfortunately, you're not going to see Luke come back. I don't think you're going to see Luke come back for, you know, Bobby's death. And that is what it is.
If anything, yeah. He would be on for 5 seconds walking a lookalike redhead into the great beyond.
Exactly. Yep. You're right. And that's all it boils down to is personal preference, and it's the actor's preference. A lot of support for Robert and Diane. They need to go full steam ahead. I agree with that. Mm-hmm. You know, kind of catching up on chat. Nathan says if Gregory is still going to live like Willow did when she was sick, another slap to the face.
And that's not going to happen.
Is when you're dealing with a situation like ALS, which has no cure.
GH doesn't cure the incurable.
Right. You know, and again, with Willow, like, you know, she waited so long for the transplant. She waited so long to even say that she had, you know, cancer. She waited so long to even start getting the treatment that in real life, maybe she would have lived, but, you know, maybe she would have died, you know, or lost the baby, or the baby was sick. There's a lot of different areas that were going. They chose the show chose to get, you know, to have the baby healthy and to eventually have Willow be healthy.
For me, when it comes to came to the Willow cancer storyline, the main thing that was missing was just more detail.
Yeah,
it wasn't detailed enough for what they were doing, in my opinion. I think there was a lot of opportunity to really build the relationship between Michael and Willow, mm-hmm. To really sell the relationship between Willow and Wiley. And we just didn't get that. Also, they could have put some circles under her eyes. I'm just saying, they could have made her look a little tired. But you know, when it comes down to it, it's over now, so we can just not be unhappy anymore, right?
Yeah. But Michael and Willow, their relationship is one of those boring parts of the show, and it's more about the fact that Michael is trying to be a powerful person and trying to blackmail Nina. But nothing is working out in his favor. He's, you know, he goes to Nina and says, you have to sell back, you know, my mother's half of the and Harley says she doesn't want it.
He's making these demands and it just won't, like, Carly doesn't want what he wants, you know? So just sell my mom, or give my mom all of the stuff you took. Well, I didn't take anything from her. Sonny walked away from her and came to me. Yeah. He could have said, oh, get away from me. I hate you forever, and punched me in the face and never talked to me again. But he chose not to.
Right.
You know, and then on top of that, too, the Metricord, sure, she bought it, but she didn't buy it maliciously.
Exactly.
She's even already tried to give it back for free. No, I don't want it. No, I'm going to find my way back on my own, she said.
Mm-hmm. You know, so, I mean, Michael, I still, you know, laugh when I just think about the character of Michael and how he's such a legacy character and he's just boring as hell.
You know, I often liken the Michael character to toothpaste. He's tube of toothpaste to me.
Yeah, I agree. And Carly.
James also included in the chat here saying, you know, he should be more excited and exciting. He's part of so many families. And that's true. It's like he got the least interesting parts of Corner Main, Spencer, Corinthos DNA.
Yeah, I agree. And again, it goes back to the writing. You know, right? I'm Chad Duhl has been on the show for quite a while. You know, we've seen him do better stories. So again, it comes back to the writing.
Yeah, I mean, I really liked Michael during the Nell stuff. There was this one scene that he had. It was an outdoor scene near a tree, and I think he like bashed a branch against the trunk afterward or something. Like he did something. But the intensity in that scene and the raw emotion and the, like, it really, I really enjoyed his war with Nell.
Yes.
It just hasn't been working out when it comes to the Willow thing. I don't know. Yeah, it all boils down to just not being as interesting as some of the other offerings on the show.
Yeah, no, but one of the biggest things that is hitting on all cylinders right now is the introduction of the new character, Mr. Brennan, who is the head of the WSB. And is the head of Pikeman.
He's the most powerful person in the world.
Yeah, exactly. But it makes me wonder how easy it is for WSB to be taken over by somebody with nefarious dealings, considering Victor Cassadine was the head of the WSB at one point as well. It's like for what is basically the CIA, you know, the World Security Bureau, or, you know, it's
something like that.
How easy is it for somebody with a a nefarious idea or bad intentions to take over.
It's a victim of lack of oversight is what it is. Yeah. You know, we've seen the shows like Scandal that had like B613, Star Trek as Section 31, the CIA even, who even knows what the next level of CIA is that we've never even heard of, right?
Yeah.
But there's no oversight from government. If there's no official panel on the Senate that has to have public hearings with their minutes published to everyone, it's very easy, I would think, to be able to manipulate your way up through a system that is probably crooked and corrupt to begin with.
So, Nathan said, for all we know, Brennan could be somebody under plastic surgery.
Right.
You know, and it's true. I mean, I've heard theories where, you know, maybe it's Jerry Jack's, you know, in reincarnation.
The third facial reconstruction,
right.
Reconstructive
which
surgery.
Which we know he's not. It's just, you know, he is Mr. Brennan. He's the head of...
Hey, more power to Brennan, though, Cody. So he comes on, right? He comes on, and immediately people are like, he's Jerry Jacks. He's Adam's dad. He's Dex's dad. He's dating Carly. So kudos to this character coming in and making an immediate splash in which people are really invested in seeing what his connection is.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. And he was immediately thrust into the main event spotlight. You know, we've been seeing this Pikeman story play out for over a year, for almost a year at this point.
And it's like they were playing the vignettes leading up on Monday Night
exactly.
Raw week after week. It's exactly. The countdown to the millennium, Chris Jericho style.
And then Chris Jericho comes out, has that legendary promo against The Rock. And, you know, yeah, he found her for a little while after that, but he was the very first undisputed champion, beating Stone Cold and The Rock in one night, which he'll never let anybody forget.
Why would you?
What was that?
Why would you?
Exactly. But yeah, so I mean, he's there. He's somebody who made a big splash, and he's already thrust. He's talking to Carly. He skipped out of Kelly's when he saw Robert come in. You know, and now we know that both Anna and Sonny were the targets.
Boy, so was I wrong!
They didn't care who
Holy
they took out.
Shit, was I wrong on my show? Oh my god! Yeah, Anna, Sonny, the targets. You know, I like the idea of moving forward with Anna and Sonny in a story together.
Yeah,
I'm with it. I'm totally with it.
I'm just waiting for the meltdown from Nina because of the fact that, you know, he's not including her in his business, and she's whining about it.
It's the tough thing. It's a gosh to be a mobstress. You know, to be a mob wife. Because, you want to know, I think, you know, her perspective, I think, totally makes sense. You know, I don't have to know everything about your business, but I would want to know if you might not be coming home.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I totally get that. She doesn't have the same experience that Carly has in that world. But she's also a different enough person, you know. I don't know. Maybe she can handle it. Maybe she can handle it more than Sonny's letting her in. I don't know.
I don't know. To me, I think Nina is just a little too erratic. You know, I mean, she's not as calculating as Carly is. I will say that, put that out there.
Oh, yeah, she'll make.
Is calculating. She's been around the mob for basically her entire adult life, ever since she got into Sonny and Jason. And yeah, I get it too. You know, I agree with James. I hate the way that they're writing Nina. It's the truth. When Michelle Stafford was playing Nina, granted, different actor. When Michelle Stafford was playing Nina, she was calculating. She was vindictive. You know, she had, you know, motives, and she was motivated to get something done. Cynthia Rothrose takes over, different, completely different actor, completely different take on Nina. But the writing is that now she's just whining. She's been whining for 9 months, ever since... You know, or more.
I don't know. She's taking some action. Come on.
A little bit. But, you know, ever since, you know, she wasn't told right away that Nell was her daughter. Ever since, you know, she's had all these, you know, and Carly didn't tell her about Willow right away. And all this stuff that's building up. She is a sympathetic victim, but she's not somebody who you can really get behind. because
that's kind of the beauty of the story, is that they're both kind of right and both kind of wrong all at the same time.
Yeah, no, you're exactly right. But you know, the fact of the matter is, I wish, honestly, and I said this on, I think when I was talking to the Pier 54 girls, I want to see more strong females. We see Jordan, and you know, but even she, you know, isn't as strong as she used to be. Portia, that she's a dumpster fire at this point, you know.
Portia's had a really tough time since that wedding.
Oh yeah. and the fact that she's trying to get into you know, she's trying to get involved in Trina and Spencer, you know, Spencer's relationship. She's the one that, you know,
Portia right now, I think, is also one of those victims of inconsistent, uneven writing. They're not sure how villainous, how dark, how bad are they wanting to push Portia.
Yeah.
You know, we've seen a little bit. I mean, she woke up Oz Haggerty, even though he could have died from it. You know, and that was kind of the first, like, shady thing that she did.
Right.
You know, she's clearly interested in separating Trina and Spencer. But I agree, if I was Trina's mom, I wouldn't want that relationship. I think that they just haven't really decided how far they want to take it. And when they do, she's either going to way back off or get real deep into something.
Well, I have a feeling, and just watching the scenes and the chemistry that's there. Yes, James, you took the words right out of my mouth. Portia and TJ. Having a lot of chemistry, and I could, you know, I could see one of those May December romances.
I don't know, it's super soapy. It would be quite the soap story.
Yes.
Here we go. When it comes to boundaries and things like that, how much are the actors really influencing this thing? Because Todd Bello, in the conversations that I've had, is Team Molly. Team, let's explore this relationship. However, the last time I talked to him, Haley Poulos was still in the role.
Yeah, there's been four of them since then.
Yeah, there's been a number of Molly since then. But it wouldn't be an incredibly soapy storyline to have that happen. It would be one of those things that would make, like, I would watch it and then feel uncomfortable while I'm watching it, which is a good thing. Because I would be pretty weirded out by that hookup.
It would almost be the equivalent of the Katie Vick storyline from WWE.
I mean, if you were to compare something that's entirely different, sure.
for those of you who do not know what I mean by the Katie Vick storyline,
just look it up on the internet.
Yeah, look it up. Google it. Katie Vick. Google it. It's part of Kane's background, and that's something I'm not going to get into right now, because that was
it's out there and totally not dating your aunt or boning your aunt. And that's kind of why it's, you know, because I mean, sure, Curtis isn't his dad, but he's sort of an uncle father figure. You know, it'd be strange. It would just be weird. I would be uncomfortable, but hey. Sure, I would take that over the surrogacy. I would take that over pretty much anything that's happening in TJ, Molly, and Christina's life right now.
Yeah.
With the exception of Blaze. Blaze is fine.
But so, you know, kind of moving back to TJ, you know, he and Molly now they've officially asked Christina to be the surrogate.
It's like Molly kind of officially asked Christina, and TJ was like, all right, sure.
Yeah. She asked, yeah.
But I like that, though. That's not what I expected from the storyline. I expected Molly, Christina angst, Christina having the baby, Molly being overbearing. I didn't expect TJ to be the one that's kind of on the outside of it. So
I didn't either.
So that was nice. That was nice.
A good swerve. I enjoyed that. And I agree. You know, it's like the with Molly and Christina, I'm glad they put aside their differences, you know, and they explain, and Molly explained it well, you know, when you look at it, and it's like, I was so overwhelmed and this and that, and I get it. And surrogacy could be a very overwhelming thing. And they explained it well. They explained how they kind of talked and talked things through, and I was okay with that. You know, could there potentially be, you know, some drama with now Christina and Blaze getting closer, which I am completely on the side of Team Craze. I really like that. I really like Blaze and Christina together. It seems to me, and this is kind of something I picked up from the Pier 54, in that when Blaze said her real name and the last name Ramirez from, you know, Texas, she could be related to Felicia, because Felicia has family in Texas, and I made mention of that this week. So the idea that she's Lila Ray Alcazar could be out the window, you know.
I think it's definitely out the window, and in my opinion, it was out the window the first time somebody said it.
I agree. I never thought that was,
honestly, for me, it all came down to Tracy. Tracy has seen this person.
Exactly. Right. Tracy would have been like, oh yeah, Blaze, I know you.
Hey, Lila, what you doing here?
Right, exactly. So, you know, and especially if she got big and famous and everything, you know, and, you know, it comes down to with Christina and Blaze, it's something new for GH. You know, they're finally kind of putting a lesbian storyline. I don't want to say
newer, you know, it's the first time we've seen it for this particular actor. It's been a number of years for Christina since we've had it.
Yeah. And it's actually something that's going to blossom, especially with her, you know, starting the LGBTQ youth program.
I'm even all for Adam being somebody that needs that youth home.
You know,
because a lot of people, and I'm jumping off of let me go back to what you were talking about. Sorry.
No, go ahead.
Because with Adam, you know, I don't necessarily, I haven't gotten from him at all. I'm romantically stalking Jocelyn.
Right.
I've always seen it as a, you're my thing that works. You're my thing that makes me win. You're my thing that makes me succeed so my dad leaves me alone. Yeah. But it's not because I want to make out with you. It's because you are making it so I'm succeeding. I need you like the drug that I'm taking.
Yeah.
You're my human Ritalin or oxyamphetamine or whatever it is. That right. Oxydextra. I don't know what it is. Whatever. Dextroamphetamine. Whatever. I don't know why they put actual drug names on the bottles. It just irritates people.
Exactly. But no.
I would love to see that. I would love to see him like have to go into this home. You know, we've been waiting so long, and she's been talking about it for so long that we really need to have some sort of prominent story that comes from it.
Yeah. No.
I think there's room for Adam there. I think that'd be something interesting to explore, especially when it comes to helping somebody get back up on their feet. You know,
his family. Yeah, and I really liked how Jocelyn kind of put her foot down and said, I don't want you to lie about, you know, me. I'll help you, you know, we'll be friends, I'll help you study and everything, but don't lie about me, you know, and that's what it boils down to.
Yeah.
And, you know, I really feel like, yeah, I agree, the pacing. And I think that's been one of GH's biggest problems is the pacing in general with many of the storylines. You know, and you could blame the writer's strike. You could blame, you know.
No, it's the head writers, and I'm not saying that to be mean, but they're the ones that decide what the pacing is. So they're the ones that are dictating it, and it's not traditionally good.
Right. But I mean, I did see the pacing pick up while the FICOR writers were writing.
So that's super fun. And nobody's ever been able to confirm this because it would just get people in trouble if they were, but we don't really know who was super in charge of the stories while the strike was happening. It wasn't Stan from the corner that they picked up to come write the script.
Right.
It was MK Weir. It was Frank Valentini. It was a combination of them. It was somebody who had been working there making these decisions. And from what I saw was them bringing their experience in the soap world into General Hospital best they can while they could. I think that there was some positive improvement when it came to the speed of storylines, the quality of the lines, the interestingness of the characters that happened while the strike was going on, that I think is worthy of attention for the people who do make these final decisions when the time comes. We always have to remember, it is exceedingly difficult to just walk into somebody's office in Hollywood and say, get out, you're fired.
Yeah.
There's contracts, there's deals, there's countersuits, there's all kinds of different stuff. So there's amount of time that needs to take place before a change can even be considered.
Yeah.
I'm not even saying that they're considering one, but if they were to be, it could take a while.
Agreed. Yeah, no, absolutely. I completely agree with you. So let's kind of go, let's go over to a different storyline completely. And Anna and Dante now, kind of building off the Pikeman thing, Anna and Dante in the morgue, you know, and then the morgue worker comes in and says, his body was taken, and all my notes are gone. And you know, and sure enough, Dante checks the police file and that's all sealed. He still has that key though. I don't know why he didn't bring it up to Anna yet and said, you know, I have this key. Do you have any idea what it might go to?
She's not a cop. I don't know. I don't know. Sometimes choices are made just because we need to wait until Monday.
Yeah.
You know, we got to push things, stretch things a little bit. How many times have we seen a scene where it's like they're leading up and then the tag is, oh my God, they're finally going to tell the truth. Like someone's like, what were you doing in Amsterdam? And the person's like, I've been caught. I've been caught. I've been caught. And then we go into the next scene. They're like, I was just taking the trash out. You know, it could be one of those moments. Why didn't he give her the key yet? Because he's going to do it on Tuesday.
Mm-hmm. yeah, no, you're exactly right.
But, plus, she's not a cop. I don't know. I mean, that's something that we talked about before when it came to the whole gun violence situation.
Yeah.
Maybe it's not time to tell her. Maybe he needs to do some more investigation on that. I can say, though, that I thought that this story was easy to follow up until this week.
Right.
I am now completely lost.
Yeah, no, you're right. Because the fact, you know, when you look at how, I don't even know how Anna got onto the Forsyth person. Like, going
she
through
just decided
every, yeah, it's like she almost like thinking that, you know, she is, you know, a former WSB agent and all this other stuff. She's worked with different people, she's seen different things. I get that. But just to come out of the blue and say, hey, there was this one guy, Forsyth, who rubbed me the wrong way, and she's going through her, you know, notes about him and whatever happened. And then all of a sudden it's like her house burns down. Mm-hmm. And then she's being, you know, harassed. And, you know, we find out that it's Charlotte who's harassing her, but Charlotte's not the one that set the fire. So it does. It got very, very confusing because it's almost like you thought that the Charlotte thing was a red herring because of Victor. Okay. Well, we know that did happen, but we now know that she did not set the fire. You know, the morgue worker comes in and says, oh, yeah, but I told you about the, you know, the burn on his leg from, you know, whatever. And then Dante says, oh, yeah, well, we found the fabric outside the house and it had the same accelerant on there. And, you know, it had DNA on there and it came back to James Forsyth. And it's like,
you know what happened? This is what happened.
Yeah.
To tell you what happened, Nam. To tell you exactly what happened. And I'm 100% right. There's no chance I'm wrong. Okay? No chance. The temporary writers were writing a story about how Victor Cassadine had manipulated this poor little girl with these tarot cards and letters and hiding her away from the family, turning her into an evil robot that is able to get Jake Weber to do whatever she wants. That is the story that they were writing. Then the strike ended.
Yeah.
And the original writers came in and said, but we were getting ready to do Pikeman. So we're going to do Pikeman.
Yeah.
I think that's probably what happened. Because it totally lost cohesion for me this week. I'm now very lost in who did what and why.
Yep.
And why it all matters and what it all means.
No, I agree with you. It did. It lost a lot of the cohesion. Because Pikeman, for all intents and purposes, was a dead storyline for a while.
It really was.
After Sonny set up the feds and, you know, and set up Cyrus, which we all thought that Cyrus was involved with Pikeman, you know, and now It's like
he's or a rival of something, you know?
Yeah. Because Cyrus was the one that set up, you know, they said that hired Betty to you know, spy on Sonny and Ava.
Get the schedule and finally take Sonny down. And it worked in multiple ways. I was trying to work against Pikeman. I'm trying to get Sonny down because I have found the Lord and all evil people must be punished like I have been. I feel like a lot of that that positive momentum has diminished.
Yes. So now we see that Cyrus was shocked when he found out that Austin was killed,
mm-hmm.
you know, or acted like it, you know. And then, you know, he had the scenes with Laura, you know, with Sonny, with Laura, with Ava, you know. And maybe the original writers, the actual contracted writers, actually do want to turn Cyrus good. And that's why this whole thing that we were led to believe that he was the head of the Gatling gang, as you called them, you know, that's been erased. Basically, Mason's in prison, Austin is dead,
mm-hmm.
Cyrus is the last one standing.
The Gatling gang is gone. Oh, didn't even really think about it like that. You're totally right. But all of those connections are now completely erased. Oh, come back, Mason.
Lollipop Guild.
Lollipop Guild.
Cyrus, go ahead and like and subscribe.
Please do like, subscribe, all that. Cyrus also, you know, I really like Jeff Coburn, so I'm always going to love Cyrus. It's that same thing that you see online where people are never going to not love Elizabeth. They're never not going to love Cyrus, Carly, depending on who it is that they've enjoyed for years and years. And I've always enjoyed Jeff Coburn, so I'm probably not ever going to not be entertained with what it is that they're doing. But I know that I'm not getting what I wanted to get. Right now.
Yep.
But I'm still gonna love it.
Exactly. One thing that kind of came out of nowhere was Drew going off to Australia. You know, we saw that Michael closed the deal with the company in Australia, acting on behalf of ELQ because Ned was Eddie and Drew was in prison.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so now Drew is going down to going down to Australia for some reason. And I brought it up on X that, you know, he's under probation, under federal probation. Right. How is he traveling to Australia? He should have had to surrender his passport.
Right.
And yet, you know,
I told you, Candace Cameron pulled a
falling thing. We need
Candace Cameron Bure, whatever her last name is, pulled some strings and got Drew to be able to leave the country. That's exactly what it is. You know, it's just super funny because he's still saying, "Oh, I'm sticking around."
Yeah.
For how long, man? Are you going to be on for 2 months and then go film a movie and come back for 6 weeks and go film a movie and then come back for 2 months and then go film a movie? Because if that's the case, you've got to break up Carly. She's on too much for you to be so absent.
Right. No, you're exactly right. The fact is that Carly is a leading woman on the show. And, you know, will we see Brennan woo her away from Drew?
I hope so.
What?
I hope so. People say pacing, quality of stories, they don't want to take their shirt off, whatever it is when it comes to what they don't like about the show.
Yeah.
I would say that the thing that I like the least about General Hospital is its tendency to return everything to the status quo.
Mm-hmm.
Things go off, things get troubled, but Michael and Willow are fine. Carly and Drew are fine.
Yeah.
Nobody died. Nobody's poor. I think that it's a pretty consequence, long-term consequence free existence for these characters.
Yeah.
I would think that would be my number one improvement.
Agreed. Yeah. Speaking of poor, Maxie is in some credit card debt.
He is.
Which, you know, I listening to the GH Mini Spotlight, you know, for, you know, last week, Frank said they finally came up with a story that actually I can relate to. And it does. It, you know, for us real people that work all our lives, work 40 hours a week, you know, and drowning in credit card debt and everything. Yeah, we can relate to Maxie needing help. However, you look at the fact that she's living in a three bedroom house now, and you know, with three kids and you know, struggling to make ends meet. Yeah, let's you know, see a struggle in the apartment still. But you know, the fact is that she got the house expecting to have the deceptor become big, not expecting her assets to be frozen because of a lawsuit brought on by Tracy Quartermaine and
Not even
her.
just a lawsuit, a baloney lawsuit.
Yes, exactly. And you know, now her and Lucy and Sasha are not taking a salary because they want to be able to pay their staff, which, you know what, I commend them as owners for that. But Lucy, I'm sure Lucy does have another form of income as a real estate agent, and I'm sure she's got money. Sasha had money, and Sonny said that I'm going to repay everything that Gladys took from you. And Sasha said, no, don't worry. I just have to start over. I appreciate the offer. I'm going to start over. You know, Maxie could have said, I'm sorry. I have three kids. I have a house. I have bills to pay. Like, she could have easily said that,
She
and
could have.
nobody would have thought different. So now here comes, you know, Felicia in to say, oh, well, you know, Mac and I'll take care and cover your bills and, you know, get you caught up and whatever. And to Maxie's credit, she said, no, I don't want to take your money. But that is kind of leaving the impetus now where Cody is, the truth about Cody's paternity is going to come out. Especially because, you know, Felicia's having flashbacks to the paternity test and Cody saying, no, I'm not, you know, he's Mac's not my father. But they're going at it in a very weird direction. Why all of a sudden is Cody so enthralled in James and James's well-being? And it's almost like when Felicia came in and said, oh, don't worry, James is okay. He was just sick at the nurse's office or whatever. It's almost like Cody was more worried about James than Maxie was.
Yeah,
Get it.
I just totally understand what you're saying. From a nerdy writing standpoint, it's because they've decided that this is the story that they're starting, where he's invested in James's life. That's the simple answer for it. It's a not fun answer, but it's, you know, the absolute God's honest truth. But if we were to assign our own reasoning for it that could be explored, he's been denying this family. He's been hella denying this family, and even though he might not be blood related to Maxie was still raised by his father. James would be, in spirit, his nephew. And he's been denying that for a while. And being somebody who has come from a place of boredom might, and knowing the choices and decisions that he that that lifestyle made him go into as an adult, being a little reckless, a little wild. Going after the money, lying to Britt to try to get the necklace, practically manipulating to try to steal from her. Those sort of things that he decisions that he's not proud of. I can see where he would want to intervene when James is still young as much as he possibly could. So I can see that. I can see that being a reasoning. But without the benefit of knowing that that's what you wanted to do with the character, you really can't build up to it.
No, I could definitely understand that. And like Jeannie points out, not until John J. York comes back. Good to see he posted today. I did not see the post, so I don't know
He
who
just
that was.
said everything's going well.
Okay,
Things are
good.
progressing.
Yeah, no, well, that's very good. And we wish him all the best, and hopefully he comes back very soon. But okay, so when we get into now, let's see, I'm wondering if there's actually anything else that we did not go over.
Oh, I'm sure. I mean, I do 1.5 to 2 hours with my mom, and we still don't talk about everything.
Oh yeah, no, I get. Oh, that's right. Esme moving out of Laura's house, and
About time.
I think it finally snapped in Spencer to say, you know, Spencer's like, okay, this is a good thing for Esme to be moving out. You know, he had to have the talk with Trina and Joss, and you know, and he needed to kind of be put in his place to the point where he's always going to be your brother. She's moving literally a couple blocks away. You're still going to be in his life. And after they leave, and he calls Trina, and Trina comes over and just holds him. You know, and I'm glad to see it, because I'm glad that Spencer kind of got over himself.
Yeah.
You know, because he's only Ace's brother, which I wish they would change that name. I'm sorry, but that is not a name for a baby. It's almost like it flaunts it to the audience's face that she remembers the fact that she wanted to name the baby Ace because it was her ace in the hole, you know, and yet she still has amnesia. So, or they're still showing it that she has amnesia.
You're missing the point, Vinny. You're missing the point. Ace is what's humanized Esme and is the core of her new life and had been before she had the amnesia. She originally started calling it Ace in the Hole, Ace in the Hole, Ace in the Hole. Then it became Ace, Ace, Ace. They did their best with the awkward pacing and strange story ideas to sell the fact that this growing life inside of Esme was awakening a portion of her that she might not have had access to in the past. Was it the right move for Esme? Maybe not. But I think that's what they did. And by having her remember this is Ace, I think goes to show that the bond that she created with her child throughout the pregnancy stuck. Even if she doesn't remember anything else from her life, she remembers Ace. And that's what's most important to her.
Makes sense, yeah. I didn't look at it from that perspective. But that really does make sense. But at least now, you know, we don't have to worry about, you know, Spencer and Esme getting closer again. Spencer,
we don't have to. No, absolutely not. Guess who's not going to be on the show in about 6 weeks?
Spencer. Yeah, exactly. Because he's going to do the Menendez show. Yeah. So he'll be away for a while. Will they recast Spencer? We don't know.
I think that they're not immediately recasting Spencer. His contract will be up sometime in 2024.
Okay.
If he comes back before then, we'll probably see his face because he's still under contract. It expires by the time he's ready to come back. Doors open.
Yeah. All right. So. All right. So let me ask you: does it slap you in the face about Alexis helping Finn get ready for the malpractice suit? You know, by playing Diane and going at him as a cross-examination, to the fact where she should still be a lawyer.
Well, she didn't want to stop being a lawyer, Alexis.
Right,
You know, she was disbarred because she banged a Neil.
Right.
And that apparently was the worst thing that Alexis has ever done. So she got disbarred for it. poor Neil. Oh man, I just tweeted about him because he was on Stargate. Anyway,
I saw that.
Yeah. Hey, there's so much crossover between GH and Stargate. I didn't realize until I looked it up today. Anyway, so she never didn't want to stop being a lawyer. She did the next best thing. I want to make an impact somehow, so I'm going to do it from this news office.
Yeah.
The character has said in the past, hey, you know, I'm bored. I wish I was still a lawyer. So I think all of that makes sense. I think that Nancy Lee Grahn was the one that said, I don't want to do court scenes anymore. And they said, okay.
Oh, wow.
Well, what do you know? What do you know? An actor asked something from the producers and they said yes to it. Holy smokes. I've never heard of that before.
I didn't know that. Okay.
I think so. I can't show you an article or anything. It's in my brain. So I feel like I heard that somewhere. That was years ago now, though.
Yeah.
And she's pretty much been shackled behind a desk and it hasn't been the most interesting material for an actor to devour. Mm-hmm. So, it's possible that they're on their way back to her getting her license. It's not like she hasn't gotten it back in the past.
That's true. Yeah.
We got a lot of lawyers right now, though, and not a lot of crime. So I'm not sure what we would ultimately get from that.
Although I do like how Alexis kind of put Finn in his place and said, listen, if Diane's going to be Diane, you're going to lose this case.
It's so fun because they're playing up to the thing that people are talking about the most when it comes to Finn, which is how unlikable he is.
Yeah.
It's a fact of his character. He's socially inept.
Yeah. And the fact is 95% of doctors have a god complex.
Right.
You know, we saw that with Patrick Drake, you know, and we see it in Finn, you know, so any jury is going to come and say, well, you know, you have this complex. You know you're right. Could you have been wrong? And if he comes back and says, well, you know, it could have been 1,000 different things for this symptom or whatever, and being sarcastic, whether or not that's true, it all depends on the jury.
Yeah. 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 I find it to be interesting, an interesting look into what this sort of malpractice thing could be in the soap world, and also kind of a spotlight into the real world as well.
Yeah.
He did nothing wrong, yet everything went wrong.
And I think we would have been, and this has been brought up on a couple other different podcasts, I think we would have been more emotionally, you know, connected to it if we had actually seen the patient, if we'd actually seen the patient come in and Finn treating the patient, and, you know, what could have led to this malpractice. Instead, we're not connected to it. We're not invested because it's just a fictional character on a show that we've never seen. So
I guess the story is more about how these other characters are reacting to it. I totally understand what you're saying, and I think that you're totally right. Limitations are right. Budget. You know, to have a character, you have to hire an actor. To hire an actor, you have to pay him, and the makeup and the wardrobe and the.
But they had an alpaca.
You know, what are we spending our money on? But is an alpaca $600 for 2 days? Because be easier to do that than the $2,000 minimum guarantee for true. 1 day of general hospital, or whatever it is. You know.
Yeah.
And I'm just speculating. I'm not back there. I'm not making these decisions. It's entirely possible that they said, well, what do we do with Elizabeth and Finn this week? Well, what if one of his patients died? It's entirely possible that that's what happened.
Yeah.
You're totally right, though. If we had been able to invest a little bit in this person's illness, if we had seen him maybe come in January and July, and then now find out in December that he's dead, we can at least point to something.
Right.
And say, oh, yeah, I remember that guy. Yeah. It could have been Chet, you know, like Amy's brother. You know, you could pick somebody random like that. To do it, that would have made it a little bit better on the launch. We'll see how it goes, because, you know, we just analyzed that scene between Alexis and Finn and Michael E. Knight as Marty Gray, and I enjoyed it a lot.
I did too.
I also enjoy Finn and Elizabeth during this. I enjoy their connection and their growing support and all of that. So I think when it comes to how the characters are responding to things, we're getting what they intended out of it. The only element that we are missing as audience is our own emotional investment to the death, like is what you were talking about.
Exactly.
Totally right. Look at us spending 5 minutes saying the same thing.
Yeah, no, you're exactly right. All right. Well, I think we covered just about everything. If there's anything else out there, we'll probably get to it next week when Christy is back.
Christy's back. But, I don't know what she thinks about it all.
But you know what, before we go, I do want to kind of plug Take Two Radio Soaps and Review. I just got done with that from 7 to 9 Eastern Time. Blog Talk Radio, you can find the archive there. If you didn't get it, there was a, we did have an interview on earlier today, and we did talk about all four soaps. Again, starting after the new year, B&B for Beginners on this channel. Stay tuned. It will not be live. I will tell you that up front. It will not be live. It will be pre-recorded and released on YouTube and podcasts on the same feed. Again, go ahead and like, subscribe, get notified. And then Matt, again, go ahead and plug your stuff where everybody can find
you. Yeah, you can find us at 10th Floor, 10th Floor Podcasts here on YouTube, youtube.com/10thFloorPodcast. Cover 10th Floor is the main thing. I know I branded everything 10th Floor, so now it's getting a little muddy, but the main podcast is the 10th Floor Podcast, the main one of it all, where we talk about General Hospital. We got Days for Dummies on the same channel as well. I do that at Sunday at 9 a.m. for Days for Dummies, Sunday at 11 a.m. Pacific times for GH. You can follow us on Twitter at 10th Floor GH, and beyond that, see you at the red carpet.
Yeah, absolutely. Matt and Kat will be live at the red carpet. Maybe not live on YouTube, but they will be at the red carpet for the Daytime Emmys this Friday on both CBS and Paramount Plus. And for those of you who, again, watching it, please like, subscribe, get notified. And if you're listening on the podcast, again, 5-star review, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, iHeartRadio. We're everywhere. go to studsandsquaredcircle.com. That's where you can find the most up-to-date information and links for us. All right, Matt, thank you for joining me today. Thank you for tagging in.
No problem.
Real. And we will definitely do a watch-along of the Men's War Games match from this past Survivor Series. We'll get that set up again, maybe after the holidays. But Matt, thank you for coming in. And we'll see y'all next time right here on Suds in the Squared Circle. Have a great day, everybody.
Bye.
All right.